I'm going to share from our life and explain to you like why our band and our ministry is called Beautiful Ashes. But I'm going to read from the book of Isaiah. If you want, just if you guys want, would just join me in the book of Isaiah from chapter 61. It says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to those who are bound. To proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to grant to those who mourn in Zion, to give them a beautiful headdress instead of ashes." Other versions say, "To give them a crown of beauty for ashes, and the oil of gladness instead of mourning, the garment of praise instead of faint spirit, that they may be called oaks of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he may be glorified. They shall build up the ancient ruins, they shall raise up the former devastations. They shall repair the ruined cities, the devastations of many generations." These verses, like from verse 3 down to verse 4, it's really like what we're doing in Rwanda. What we are trying to do, at least, they say, they shall build up the ancient ruins. They shall raise up the former devastations. They shall repair the ruined cities, the devastations of many generations. I don't know where to start. Like, if I really shared my story, it would take like a day, and obviously I'm timeless, but I will try to just excuse it as much as I can. I was born in 1984. I'm older than I look, but 1984. So I'm 31 years old, and I was born in a country called Rwanda. If you guys maybe don't know about it, you have probably watched Hotel Rwanda, so you can you at least have some idea, but I was born there, and I was born in a society that was really broken. I was born in this society where like ethnicism and tribalism was really big, and my dad had been in and out of jail a couple times. And when I was born, just like a year after I was born, he said this wasn't safe for my family to stay in this country. So he decided that we should move from the country of Rwanda to go live in a neighboring country called Congo. And we wanted to move to a city called Goma that is close to Rwanda. And we lived there until 1993, when my mom died. When my mom died of cancer, my dad was African, obviously. Then, when people were like growing up around his time, you know, polygamy was allowed. Right now, it's allowed. You know, too bad. Too good. Sorry. Anyways, right now, I mean, when my dad had three wives, and my mom was the last wife he married. So I was when we were born, our dad was a bit older, and so I had my two stepmoms back in Rwanda. They stayed in Rwanda, and my dad had moved to Congo with us because we were the young ones, and he wanted to help us. He wanted to raise us up. And then, so living in Congo, just like being a foreigner for the people who were there, and just like being teased like many times, my dad. And after my mom died, my dad decided that we should come back to Rwanda. But he decided to come back to Rwanda at the worst time ever. He decided to come back to Rwanda in 1993 in the month of September, only 6 months before the genocide. So we got back in Rwanda, and I'm only like just like 9 years old, and going to school. And just like being in the school, being picked on as a Tutsi, like, you know, look at you, like all of that kind of thing. And just like two trimesters, the genocide kicks in, and it's the worst thing ever, like seeing people dying at only the age of 9. And seeing people dying and just like jumping dead bodies and seeing your families like being killed, not even like being shot, because to be shot, you had to pay to be shot. You know, that was really a precious death. You know, dying with machetes, decapitated, and that kind of thing. That was the actual thing. So what you see in Hotel Rwanda, it's, I would say, everything you see happened, but actually there's so much more to what the movie showed. Like, the crazy stories that, you know, you can hear about. But I'm going to just, like, shorten my testimony, my genocide testimony, just in the three things that happened in that time. First of all, the hand of God, because I always share my testimony in the way that God will be glorified. The story is not mine. The story is Jesus's. And I want to make sure that God is glorified at the end of my story, because everything, when I looked back and began gave my life to Jesus and looked what God had done for me, I said, there is no way, like, God had purpose on my life, and he had a purpose of what I'm doing right now. And I just, like, make sure that the glory is his, it's not mine, because there is nothing that I can ever do except him doing everything through me. And so, first of all, this incident happened when farming is big in Rwanda, and usually people there's so many hills in Rwanda, so people when they're farming, they go from the top of the mountain from the top of the hill going downwards, and so we have what we call terraces. So it goes like this, going down the hill. And I remember that in the genocide, we're just hiding under one of those, and we just had like a lot of noise coming from the top of the hill, and someone was running down the hill, and the killers, people who wanted to kill him, were just right behind him, just a few steps. And this guy jumped over our heads. He just keeps on running down, and these guys who were running after him, they came and stood right where we were, like standing right here, and we were hiding like right down here. And they started shouting down the hill to the people who were down there, and they were like, kill that guy, if you don't kill him, we're coming after you, we're going to kill you. So they're just like standing right here, and for us, we're down here, and I'm praying. The only thing I knew to pray was praying rosary, because my dad was a big Catholic, and he taught us all the rosaries and all the prayers. But that day, I made my own prayer, and I said, God, if you serve me, I'm going to serve you. I didn't even know what it meant to serve God, but I mentioned that. And then after saying that, these guys standing, they just kept on looking there. They never looked down, you know. They never looked down, you know, because it was a matter of seeing us, and then they would just, like, finish us. And then after realizing that this guy had escaped them, they just turned back and went back. I was like, God, this is the hand of the Lord. The second time was when I was walking. I was on that hill, and I was living with a little girl, a little girl who is like my nephew, that I had actually gotten out of a toilet, because they will just like beat up people, and some of them, because there was people would be so many that they wouldn't like kill all of them. They wouldn't finish killing them. They would just like drag some people who were still alive and just throw them in like toilets and holes and all of that. And when I was hiding, I came out of my hiding place, and I was passing by, and I heard some people stalking underground. And they're like, I wish they killed me. You know, that's what they were saying. I wish they killed me. I wish they finished me. What, you know, they threw them in the toilets while they were still alive. So I heard some voices, and I recognized the voice of one of the girls who was talking. And then I like took out the bricks and everything, the things that they had, like, because they had just broken the toilet was like on the top of them. So just removing things and got her out of that. And then we hid together for like a few weeks in some place. But as we were hiding together, the people whose house we were hiding in, they started complaining, saying that we were eating their food and they can't keep the both of us together, so one of us has to go. But they told us that there was a genocide. There was an orphanage like about 10 kilometers away from where we were, and they would say that there were about 7 red blocks. And if you pass those 7 red blocks, you could be able to get in the orphanage and live there. And I said, this is a girl, and she's younger than me, so I'm going to keep her here, and I'm going to walk that journey. That journey, I always say, was like a journey of Jesus going to the Calvary, because I met so much. Like, I encountered so much. And it was just like a 1 hour walk journey, but I did it in 3 days, because I would only walk at night, and there were like swamps and rivers and all of that, and I would just find myself in some of those things, but I kept on walking, and I was so hungry, because for all of those 3 days I didn't eat anything. But when I left this girl there, she stayed there, and she actually survived the genocide, and she just recently got married and actually had a child. It's really a miracle of God. I walked and I went and made it to the orphanage. But on the way, I met these guys who recognized me, because my auntie was living somewhere in the town before I reached the city I was going to. And they said, give us money. I said, I don't have money. I'm just a 9-year-old. Where can I get money from? They said, give us money or we kill you. I said, I don't have money. If you want to kill me, just do it. And then they said, get down on your knees. I got down on my knees. And they said, put your arms right in front of you. I did that. And one of them had a hoe. And they just like hit like so hard like towards my hands. And they just wanted to chip off my hand, my arms. And I just like pulled them back. But the hoe just went like deep in the ground. And I just like, when I pulled them out, and when I was like, okay, I remember I have some money. You guys come with me. I'm going to show you where I have kept my money. So some of them came. They gave me one little boy, and I just like, as we were walking, I just like pushed him in a ditch somewhere, and I ran for my life. But one other miracle that happened that day is that, like, really the devil is a liar. And what the devil wanted to do was to chip off my hands. And those are the hands that I'm using to play the guitar to praise my God today. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, so that was the second thing. And the third thing was when I was walking, and I was just walking in a river, like towards the river. Like that time I was so hungry and I was so tired, and I was saying in my heart, God, I'm not better than all the people I have seen dying in my eyes. So if you want to kill me, kill me. And I was walking towards a red block. You saw that red blocks in the Hotel Rwanda. You can go watch Hotel Rwanda if you haven't watched it. You can have a glimpse of how bad the Rwandan genocide was. But I was they have what they call red blocks in the Hotel Rwanda, if you remember. And as I was walking towards this one red block, it was so dry. They say that was the most dangerous red block in the area. But I was walking towards it, and I saw that the killers were right there, sitting there, really not doing anything. And I was so ready to die at that moment. And there was like a lake here. And this lake, that's where they used to throw, like, they would just, like, make someone stand right at the edge of the lake, and they would just, like, chop off your head, and you would just, like, fall into the lake, and then they would just, the water, because it was April, there was so much rain then, and the water would just take off the dead bodies and just send them into the rivers around there. And I knew that was the most dangerous red block. But I said, I don't care. I'm going to die. I'm ready. Like, just God, kill me right now. So I started walking towards that red block. And And to be honest, I went out of my mind. I didn't know what happened. And I always say that this is like the crazy. This was a supernatural miracle that the way God took me, the way God helped me to go through that red block. Because I was walking, and as I was walking, and I was ready, and all of these guys were ready for me. They had started to stand up and like getting ready their machetes and all of that. And as I was walking, all of a sudden, I saw thousands and thousands of people. Honestly, I don't know where those people came from. I don't know if God sent his angels, but all those people, they were there. And I wasn't dreaming, but I was out of my mind, and I was walking like as if I don't care. I just like kept walking, and all of a sudden there was so many people, and they all spoke Kinyarwanda, which is the Rwandan language, and they were speaking in the language, and the killers were asking them, "Where are you coming from? Where are you coming from?" They were all like, you know, like they were all confused, and they were like, "What is happening right now?" And it's like. And they were like, "We're running away from like the RPF, the rebel. It was the rebel group. That's the party, the ruling party right now, the one that stopped the genocide." And they were like, "We're running away from the RPF military. They're just like right like a few kilometers away from here. So we're running away from them." And they're like, are you all Hutus? Like, show us your identities, show us your IDs." And they were all showing their IDs, and they were like, okay, we can see that. But in all of that chaos that God created in that moment, that's when I walked through and I passed. And I came back, and I came back to my mind right when I had passed. It's like just the story of Peter. Do you know how Peter got out of prison? And he just like he thought he was dreaming, you know. He thought he was dreaming. He passed through like four gates of prisons, and then he came back to his senses later. And that's what happened. I came back to my senses, and I looked back. I was like, "Oh my gosh, how did I pass by that red block?" Because it was the most dangerous. But like all of a sudden, those people appeared from nowhere. I don't know how that happened. But those are the three things that God did for me. And when I gave my life to Jesus later, like about 7 years after that, I remembered all of these things that God had done for me. Anyways, that's my story of the genocide. I'm hoping and I'm praying about writing a book about my story. And hopefully, maybe next time we come back here, we have that book ready and we can share, we can read more. There is so much more to that story. But the genocide ends, and then I got adopted in my brother's home. And I was adopted in my brother's home. What happened in Rwanda right after the genocide? Any relative who was able to bring in as many people as he could, because the society was just completely broken. No one, like, there were no parents, there were no uncles, there were no anyone who could just gather anyone from the family in their house. They had just to do it, and God miraculously kept on providing for those people. So my brother invited me in his home, and he was married to this lady who was remarried. Already was married, but her husband had died in the genocide as well. So this lady had three of her children. She had six of her sister's children. She had four of her siblings, and she had her mom in one home. And I was there with my brother and another niece of mine. We lived in that house, and to be honest, I was so... I wasn't the priority. Like, all of those people were priorities for this lady. You know, they're my family. They're my blood, so I'm going to take care of them. So growing up, as a teenager, I was really neglected, and I was like, I just didn't have even the basic needs, like clothes, like shoes, all of that. And I grew so bitter. I grew so angry. You know, just like kept on adding all of these things that were making me angrier and angrier. And I was so much bitter. And I was like, "God, all I need is just to seek revenge. All I need is to revenge." The only thing my dad told me was, "Go to school, get educated, and you're going to have you're going to see life is going to get better. So I went to school. I kept on going to school in the middle of all of this chaos. And I finished my school. And in the middle of that, I gave my life to Jesus in 2003. And when I gave my life to Jesus, a few months later, I just discovered that I had a gift of songwriting. So I started writing songs. And the more I wrote songs, the more like I would take out whatever was inside of me. So it just quickly became a therapy for me. I started writing these songs. They were more like personal songs. They were like my journal entries. So the more I wrote songs, the more I felt like I was being free. And all of a sudden, I just felt like I was so free. I was so free to even meet the people who killed my family, to talk to them and tell them I forgive you face to face. And I was like, God, where did this freedom come from? And I felt God saying, you know, I have given you this gift of songwriting. So you wrote these songs, and these songs have become a therapy for you. So the same way I have healed you through these songs, I'm also going to heal so many through these songs. First of all, in your country and everywhere else. So we've been actually right now, we've been traveling all over the U.S., all over Canada, going in different places, and actually we usually do like small, like a living room meetings, and we just pray, and we have like that intimacy of just praying and sharing more with people that we know and their friends and their homes. So maybe next time when we're here, if you're free to invite us to your home, that would be great. It became a therapy for me. I completely got healed. I felt like I was so free. And God said, you know, I start this ministry and go sharing, keep on sharing with people from here and there. So we started this ministry, and God told us to call it Beauty for Ashes, because He said, as you will be singing, I'm going to be taking people's ashes and just exchange it with my beauty. And that's why He does. So we started this ministry. It's called Beauty for Ashes. But quickly, I realized that it was more for young people, and I mean also for older people, but mostly for young people, because when I gave my life to Jesus, I was in high school. So we started this ministry of going into high schools. In the video you saw, we just like go to high schools and preach the gospel and share our testimonies and tell them where we've come from and tell them that, you know, there is nothing that is impossible. Give them hope. You know, even though you're here in Africa, you can dream. You know, I was born. I went through all of these things. I went through, like, all of these crazy things happened to me. But right now, I'm like going overseas and preaching the gospel and sharing the gospel with people and just giving young people hope like that. Because this, what happened in the genocide, actually, what I didn't tell you is that the enemy was targeting the parents, first of all. They wiped off all the mothers and the fathers. That was the target. Like, in the genocide, the first thing was, like, you kill the parents first. Kill the men first. You know, that's how the devil is bad. You know, it's like the fathers, are the image. They're the ones who really set, like, you know, the family. They're the one. They're the best of the family. And so the devil's strategy was like to wipe off all the men first. And then they realized that all the men were wiped off. And then they started killing the women. And now they start killing everybody. But the strategy was killing the men first. So right now, what Rwanda has suffered is that there is a whole generation that is missing in Rwanda. So people like us, we grew up parenting ourselves, you know, and these are the people who are now getting married, who are having kids, and they just don't know like how to figure that out. But the more revelations God gives to us, the more we go to these high schools, that we go to share with these young people and tell them, you know, you don't have to. People started now like throwing themselves into like prostitution, and there is a crazy amount of how do you call it? It's like fornication and all of that, you know, like just young kids, young girls, just like having sex with like older people. they're like these young men, like, it's just like crazy, you know, crazy. This generation is doing crazy things. And so for me, witnessing that and being on that side of life, and just God, just like God snitching me out of that, and giving me this grace. That's why we go around and sharing with young people. So that's why you saw in the video. And we have many more different initiatives. We have our CDs and DVDs as well at the back. If you want to know more about this, you can come and talk to us after the service. But that's in those are the efforts we're trying to make, and we're inviting actually different people to partner with us in making that happen. But in a few words, I'm sorry, I'm already like 5 minutes past. But yeah, but that's what is happening, and we invite you guys to pray for us, to keep us in your prayers, and to stand with us, you know, to partner with us in different ways. Yeah, is there anything I forgot? Talking, I think we can. That's really mostly what it is. I don't know if Amanda is someone who came out of this. Maybe she can just like summarize a little bit, like someone who is an outsider. She came into our lives. She's my fiance, as you heard. That's hope, right? Like that's a hope we confess. Like just meeting someone. We're getting married in July next year. You can book your flight. That's it. Thank you so much for hearing my story.
Yeah, I think God is amazing. Amen? You know, and a country like Rwanda, I mean, the stories that Olivier has shared with you this morning from his time in 94, they're just, you know, like a very small snippet of what happened during that time. I mean, the devastation was enormous. We're talking about a million people who died in the course of 100 days. Men, women, children. And like you said, there's a whole generation that has really grown up parentless. And you can imagine the impact that that's had on not only them, but on the country. So at the same time, as it's a big challenge, it's a huge opportunity from a ministry standpoint. And that's why we're really happy to be able to kind of stand in that place and go minister to young people. And as Olivier shared, we're really happy to partner with anybody who's interested in doing that. If you ever want to come to Rwanda and visit us and really just play that parent role in encouraging young people, that's an enormous ministry need in Rwanda. But so as you said, we sing songs in the same way God used songs to heal Olivier. We use songs to minister to others and pray that God would heal others through our music and also through the conversations that we have. Because everywhere we go, it's really just a platform for discipleship, a way for us to connect with young people, for them to connect with us. You might have seen the tent that was in our video, and we didn't really describe it there. It's basically a 3,000-person tent that's sitting vacant on a lot that's got basketball courts, soccer fields, volleyball courts. It's basically the perfect venue for youth ministry. So we're really praying that we'll be able to transform that place into a youth center and develop programs to just engage with young people and to disciple young people. Yeah, I've really seen how their music has made an impact in Rwanda. Their music, you can hear it on the radios all the time. If you walk into almost any church in the country, you can hear them using their music in their worship services. And they've been going around touring to different parts of the world, and everywhere they go, they've been making an impact. So, yeah, I'm really glad to be here this morning, really glad to be able to share with you, and I'm really glad to praise God with you. Thanks so much.